First today, a love letter to Cuba from a photographer and writer who grew up in the Kansas City area. Byron Motley has made something like 15 trips to the island in 8 years and snapped tens of thousands of images for a new book, Embracing Cuba. You'll know you've got the right book when you see the cover photograph of the woman with red flowers in her hair and the nastiest cigar I've ever seen. Byron Motley is an award-winning singer, songwriter, filmmaker, lecturer, and photographer. His work has appeared in Vanity Fair, The Advocate magazine, and the New York Daily News. And Byron, welcome home. So nice to have you here.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
How did a kid who grew up around here end up becoming such a big fan of Cuba?
Well, my parents went to Cuba back in the pre-revolution days, before Fidel Castro. And so I grew up hearing their stories about how great Cuba was and how much they loved it and wanted to return.
Yeah.
And so knowing that story, I always wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that the embargo that has been in place for so many years, I didn't know Americans were traveling there through these years and could travel. And so finally in 2005, I found out I could go to Cuba.
I was going to say, how difficult was that? Because my sense was it was very difficult.
Well, you have to have the proper credentials.
Yeah.
I use what's called a general license for research.
Mm-hmm.
And working on a documentary I'm doing about the Negro Baseball Leagues, I was going there to Cuba to do research on that project. So I flew up to Toronto, met up with a baseball research group going from Canada, and off we flew to Havana.
And it sounds like the first time you went, it just knocked your doors down.
It was just a life-changing event for me.
Why? What was it about Cuba that grabbed you so much?
It's the spirit of the place. I'll tell you a story. When I got off the plane in
Havana, first time.
The very first time, I'm walking out of the airport with my luggage, and I'm walking toward the tour bus, and I've seen none of the country at this point, only this airport. But as I'm walking toward the tour bus, I took in a deep breath. I smelled that Caribbean air, and I heard a voice whisper in my ear, and it said, "I'm home."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
It really did.
So it was a spiritual moment for you.
It was a spiritual moment connection from the second I walked out of the airport. And I didn't understand it. I kind of ignored it. But throughout the entire 10 days I was there, I kept hearing this voice, "I'm home. This is home. This is it." And just fell in love with the people, the place, the music, the art. Everything about the country just resonated with my soul.
And the place today, you hear people talking, is it still the place today that it was 40, 50 years ago, or is it changing?
Well, I wasn't there 40, 50 years ago, so I can't answer that. But I assume that it has the same spirit that it's had all along.
Mm-hmm.
The Cuban people are just who they are. And they're wonderful, and they're embracing. That's why we named the book Embracing Cuba. They're just a lovely, lovely people. And I think, unfortunately, our media has told us different stories about another side of the Cuban people through the years. It's not true.
Hmm.
And I'm sure that through the years that Americans have been going there, that that they have discovered that the Cuban people are just awesome.
So
they love Americans. They love us, absolutely love Americans, and always have.
This notion they're oppressed, they're dispirited, you're describing something different.
Not true. Not true. Not from what I've seen. Depends on what you mean by oppressed. I mean, they don't have certain freedoms that we do as far as freedom of speeches and that sort of thing. But they're not concerned with that.
Hmm.
They're just having a good time living their lives. They don't really talk about politics. When the subject does come, I never bring up the subject of politics. Sometimes somebody will bring up the subject of politics and they say, "Oh, I don't want to talk about that. That's politics," and move on to the next subject.
Huh.
They're not concerned with that. That's not the focus of their minds.
Not concerned, or they're afraid to talk
about
it?
No, they're not afraid of talking. No, no. Mm-hmm. They're not concerned with it. It's not on the top of their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they know what's going on with world ideas and world issues and things like that. They probably know more about our government than a lot of American citizens do. But it's not the topic or subject for them. They want to discuss music and arts and dance and love and excitement. And, they're a very spirited people. So,
music, arts, and dance.
And baseball.
And baseball. All very, very important to the Cuban people.
Very important. And boxing as well.
And these are people, the Cuban people elevate the stars of those different genres in a way that maybe goes beyond what you see here?
I think so, because musicians and artists are really respected in Cuba, and they make probably more money than most other people because they are able to perform. They're able to sell their art internationally. So they make really good livings, the artists in Cuba. And they're well respected. And it's a whole different way of looking at in America, we kind of downplay artists. And we kind of, that's just an artist. That's just, you know, he'll do it for free or we can get it. That's how we look at artists in America, where in Cuba, they're revered. Yeah.
Tell me about a favorite place in Cuba. Describe it to us. What does it sound like? What does it look like? Give me a sense.
My favorite place in Cuba is the Malecón. It is a 3 to 4 mile long seafront pedestrian walkway that also is a roadway that stretches from the mouth of the of Havana Vieja, the old Havana, all the way down for, like I said, 3 to 4 miles to another neighborhood in Havana called Vedado. And along that 3 to 4 mile stretch, you just have the ocean view. You have a view of the Morro, which is the old fort built, I guess, back in the 1600s or something, where they used to keep prisoners. And you have this wonderful seafront full of people who are, you know, musicians playing their instruments, families picnicking, lovers kissing, and kids jumping off into the seawall swimming. It's just magical. And it's 24/7 that people are out there just partying, having a good time. It's also a very spiritual place. I go there and meditate. And it's just wonderful. It's just a great place to reconnect where your soul just is. Feels part of what Cuba is all about. That's for me.
You've been there, as I mentioned in the opening, what, 15 times?
18.
18?
18 in 10 years, but who's counting?
Okay. You just got back.
Just got back.
You and the Pope sort of
Saturday.
Crossed air paths on the way in. And tell us about how you got started doing this book. Where did the idea come from? And tell us about that.
Well, being a photographer and thinking I'm, you know, fairly decent at what I do. I've always wanted to put together a book of my photos from Cuba. But I also know that nowadays it's really hard to get a publishing deal to do a coffee table book because books just don't sell like they used to. And it's a different, whole different world for books now. So for a couple of years, I tried to find a publisher and had no luck. And then 2 years ago, I found the University Press of Florida. I sent them a proposal and they called me and said, hey, we love this idea. Can we collaborate and do this? I was like, wow, really? You really like my work? And so I was just honored that they said, yes, we want to do this. So this book has been a two-year-long process, putting it together, choosing the photographs, writing the essays. There's 7 chapters. Each chapter has a full-on essay kind of summarizing that topic from dogs to architecture, sports, music, arts, dance, the people, classic cars, of course, and politics. So it covers a wide range of topics. And so it was quite daunting having to write the text for all that as well, because that wasn't typically.
I was going to say the idea of your publisher was this would be a book of photographs. And then the publisher also sort of threw out the idea, hey, Byron, can you give us 20,000 words too?
Yeah, that was shocking.
And photographers. Listen, photographers are smart people, but photographers are all about the image and not so much about the words. How did you roll with that?
Well, at first, and that was that when the contract came, the contract stated we want 20,000 words. Before that, it was just, you know, the book. And so when the contract shows up and I'm reading this, I'm going, 20,000. So I call them immediately. They said, well, you know, it doesn't have to be 20,000, but we'd really like to have it a little bit more fleshed out with the text. So I took a deep breath and I said, okay, I'm up for the challenge. But then when it came to writing it, I sat in my front of my computer for 2 days just looking at the screen going, what am I going to write?
Yeah.
I kept thinking 20,000 words. But then the thought came to me, make it a love letter to Cuba.
And that opened up the vein.
That opened up the floodgates and the writing just flowed from there.
Yeah. And just to be real clear, you were able to go wherever you wanted to go in Cuba or not?
Everywhere I've wanted to go. There's no restrictions at all for anybody. I was even blessed with the opportunity for 2 years. I was the first and only American photographer ever allowed on the baseball diamonds in Cuba.
Really?
Through a contact of mine at the Ministry of Culture, they were able to arrange for me to have that access.
So why was that something special? Why is that so?
Because they don't allow foreigners on the baseball diamonds in Cuba, period. And I don't know how they got that for me, why it was given to me. I have no idea. But she called me one day and she says, we got your credential. the field is yours. So for two years, I was allowed to go any stadium in the country and photograph the players, be up close in the dugouts. I was not allowed to travel on the buses or anything like that with the players, but I could go on and have carte blanche in the field, which was awesome. That was incredible. And because only American photographer ever allowed that opportunity.
And baseball, is, as you've mentioned, is such a big deal there. It's played 365 days of the year because the weather allows it. It's an ongoing thing.
Sure, sure. And kids play on the streets and I've seen kids playing in the apartment buildings. I've seen them playing just everywhere. On the Malecón, you know, everywhere their baseball is the sport. People love their baseball. And the teams are good. Some great players. They have some great players in Cuba, as we can see now that some have defected to the U.S.
Some of them are playing in the American League. Some of them are on the Royals, I think.
Yeah.
I'm visiting with Byron Motley. If you're just joining us this morning, his new book, Embracing Cuba. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. So the big challenge for you in putting this book together was you had so many images, 100,000?
Oh, at least.
And you're having to comb through those and pick out the ones you want for the book.
And narrow that down to 200.
Yeah, 200.
200, yeah. So it took a lot of time in front of the computer, and I would print photos out and would invite friends over, and I'd make a slideshow and say, what do you guys think? You know, you like some of these? You not like some of that? So I had like a core group of friends who I trusted, who I knew.
I was going to say, did you have an editor who helped you along your way, sort of cull through those things?
Sure, there was an editor at the publisher who helped toward the end, once I got narrowed down to two or three. I can't decide between these two or three, what do you think? And he would say, let's go with this one.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, it was a huge task.
And that helps a little bit, right?
Sure. But yeah. I enjoyed the process the whole time. I really enjoyed it. And it gave me a chance to revisit those images and relive some of those moments, because every one of those images in my book, there's a personal connection for me with those images. I can recall where I was, if I was laughing at the moment, or what I felt at the moment when I was shooting different photos.
You got to tell me, Byron, about the cover photograph and this woman again. She is, she looks like she'd be someone I'd want to sit down and talk with a little bit. She's dressed in mostly white, red flowers in her hair, a blue cap of some kind, and just the nastiest, most prolific cigar I've ever seen in my life popping out of her mouth there. Tell me about her.
Well, her name is Esperanza, which means hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that until this past May when I was there, when I went back and showed her a copy of the book, or a copy of the cover of the book. And she was shocked to find out that she's going to be in the copy of a
I was going to say, how did that go over? Did she like it?
She loved it. She absolutely was just thrilled.
And, have you sent her a copy of the book?
Not yet. I will the next time I go, though. I shot that photograph. I almost didn't shoot that because she sits in a square near the cathedral called San Francisco Square. I believe that's the name of the square. And she sits there with some other women dressed in the traditional garb. And a lot of tourists photograph those women. So I thought, I'm not going to photograph them because everybody photographs them. And I try to shoot different things that no one else does. But again, something said, no, look at her. She's beautiful. Take a shot of her in case, some tour company wants to buy one of your pictures from you, the ladies dressed up. So I shot this shot of her, and she just gave me a little extra something. I've seen a lot of photographs of her by other people, but nothing as special as what she gave me in that moment. I don't know what our connection was, but maybe she knew somewhere in her spirit that she's going to be on the cover of a book someday, of my book. And she gave me that beautiful photograph. I gave her $1 because that's what she asked for, and went about my merry way. And when the publisher saw that photo, they said, we want this for the cover.
And did that surprise you?
It surprised me.
Because?
Because I just wasn't
didn't
expecting.
Surprise me.
It just, I don't know. I wouldn't have chosen that for the cover for some reason, but they thought it was fantastic and that's what they wanted to use. So they know what they're doing, so I let them run with it.
I know women smoke cigars, but is that more common in Cuba than it is up here?
Very common. I have a lot of photographs of different women, just regular women, housewives, sitting in their front stoops smoking a cigar, and yeah.
That is one scary cigar.
That's a big cigar.
Yeah.
I think that was made specially for those women, or they use them, the bigger ones, to attract the tourists and that sort of thing. So, but it's quite a fun picture.
Byron Motley is my guest. His photographs are in a new book, Embracing Cuba. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Sonia from Gladstone. Welcome to Up to Date, Sonia.
Hi. I love your program.
Thank you.
I'm listening to the gentleman. I was in Miami Beach about 10 years ago, and the Cuban people are so wonderful. Even the dissidents, they were impressed at how much I knew about Cuba. I even knew that Fidel Castro used to be a baseball player. My biggest regret is that I had a Cuban friend that he wanted to marry me, and I wish I had. But my birthday is next month, and I want to know how to get this book called Embracing Cuba.
Well, how do you get it, Byron?
It's available at all bookstores, wherever books are sold.
Okay.
You can order directly from the publisher also, which is University Press of Florida. Amazon.com. It's everywhere you can find a book, you can find it.
And you'll want to get it, Sonia. It's quite a book.
That's going to be my birthday present. And I'm going to tell you something. American media really can be kind of down on Cuba, but the Cuban people are not as depressed as a lot of people think they are.
They're not at all.
Like I said, my biggest regret is that I had a boyfriend and he wanted to marry me, and his mother would talk on the phone. He would call Cuba. I could not speak Spanish and she could not speak English, but somehow we felt that beautiful energy through the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to be excited to get this book. Okay.
Great. Thank you so much.
Okay. I'm glad you called, Sonia. Thanks very much.
Thanks for your show.
Yeah, thank you. How would you describe your style, the way you shoot photographs? What makes a Byron Motley photograph distinctive from others?
Well, I think it's more documentary style.
Mm-hmm.
I just shoot life. I just shoot whatever captures my eye. Anything, you know, I don't shoot any one thing in particular. It's just I'm walking down the streets of Cuba from sunup to sundown, literally, with my camera. And I just shoot whatever captures my eye. So I think it's more of a documentary style where I'm just trying to document what I see and trying to capture the moment, the spirit. I don't really think about it. I just shoot what I see.
Your favorite photograph in this book I thought was really an interesting choice. Describe it to us.
My favorite photograph, I don't know if we're on the same page of this or not.
I think I saw an interview. That's where I'm getting this from.
The conga drum?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, the conga drum. Funny story. In 2006, my partner and I were going to Cuba, and I just had a vision before I left on the trip of a image that I wanted to capture in my head.
Yeah.
I just had this image in my head. So we're in a town called Trinidad, Cuba, which is about 4 hours from Havana, walking down the street, hear a band playing. Walk up, we hear this band, the very end of the band, and the band stops. And I see the conga player, he sets his conga drum next to a staircase. I could not believe what I had witnessed because that is exactly the image that I had seen in my head that I wanted to capture. To me, that spoke, what is Cuba to me? That spoke Cuba. So when I saw that, when I saw he had set the drum right where I have envisioned, I was stunned. I couldn't move. I just was like shocked, and I said to my partner, I said, I wanted to shoot that exact shot. He said, well, go shoot it. What are you waiting for? And I'm glad he said that because I think I would have let the moment pass because I was in such shock that I was looking at what I had actually envisioned.
And that image is your favorite photograph. Why?
Because
what is it about?
Because it just captures. Well, I love drums for one. Mm-hmm. I love conga drums, and it just captures. With the patina of the staircase behind it, the different colors of the kind of turquoise colored drum with the blue staircase, it just resonates with me. But there's so many images in the book that I love, but that one, just because of that moment, because I visualized that moment, actually stands out as probably my favorite in the book.
Tell me about a group that you write about in the book, the Santa Amalia Dancers.
Oh, my buddies. They are a group of older people who are probably between 70 and 90 years old, and they meet every Thursday now at a place called Uniac in the Vidavo section. And they are spirit a group of older folks who like to get down and boogie.
Hmm.
And they dance like you would not believe. Some of them tap dance. They all do the Cuban kind of salsa and rumba dancing. And they move like they're in their teens.
Hmm.
They're amazing. They've been this group called the Santa Amalia Dancers, they've been together for about 50 years. And they started off during the revolution when jazz music was banned in Cuba. And they were lovers of jazz, so they would get together at a house in a district called Santa Amalia.
Yeah.
And they would meet every Saturday and have these fiestas. And the police would turn a blind eye and let them party to the wee hours of the morning, and they drink their rum and dance, dance, dance. So this has been a tradition now. This has lasted for almost 50 years.
Hmm.
And they're just the nicest group of people. They're like family. And I tell you, they've taken me in like I'm one of them.
So when you walk in the door.
Oh, when I walk in the door, they just go crazy. They go absolutely
crazy. That's
okay.
Nothing wrong with that.
And I love it.
Yeah.
And I never let them know I'm coming. I just show up, you know, out of the clear blue one day, and they're just like, oh.
Yeah.
So they're a very, very special group of people.
Oh, where in the Kansas City area are you from?
I grew up in the Swope Park area.
Hmm.
My parents now live north of the river, but I grew up on Benton Boulevard.
Yeah. Why photography?
Well, I'm a very visual person, and this photography really came out of the clear blue. To be honest, I just have always been curious about photography, never really studied it, and I think it was about in 1992, I was in my apartment in L.A., and I was watching it was either Jerry Springer or one of those shows, and they were featuring paparazzi photographers, and I thought, oh, that looks like it'd be kind of fun. I live in L.A., so you know, I see stars occasionally. I'm gonna start carrying my camera around in my car, and this is back during the days of shooting film, and I still shoot film, and so I just take my camera with me everywhere, and I just start shooting people I see around, either just people walking down the street or. Like Jay Leno, I see him drive his car, and I just start shooting.
We just had him on last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And it just started growing more and more into this enjoyment, and then a little bit of a passion. And then when I went to Cuba, it just blossomed into this amazing passion of mine now.
You shoot film over digital. Why?
I shoot both. Mostly digital, but I still shoot film because I believe in keeping that medium alive, for one.
Hmm.
So I shoot with the Canon AE-1, the old Canon AE-1's been around forever, that my father actually had that I borrowed from him and never returned. And I also shoot with a Rolleiflex, the old box cameras with the film. I shoot with those three mediums still. So I use the digital, which is really convenient, and then the film and the Rolleiflex, which are both film, just to keep that medium alive. And when I shoot with the Rolleiflex, it's usually all in black and white.
You know, two more things about you that really caught my eye. Your father.
Uh-huh.
He is the last survive. If I understand correctly, the last surviving umpire from the old Negro Leagues.
That is correct.
That played, obviously, here in town.
Yes.
He's still living up north of the river.
Yes.
I bet he's got some stories.
He's got amazing stories. And we collaborated on his memoir 7 years ago. It's called Ruling Over Monarchs, Giants, and Stars. True Tales of Umpiring. I can't remember, the title is long, but the basic title is Ruling Over Monarchs, Giants, and Stars. And that's his memoir of his days in the Negro Leagues and being one of the first black Marines, called the Montfort Point Marines.
Yeah.
He grew up in the South, in the segregated South in Alabama, and then found his way to the Negro Leagues and finally to the Pacific Coast League, which is the highest tier he got to.
Yeah.
Tried to make it to the majors, but segregation kept him from reaching that dream. But
How old is he today?
He's 92. Yeah.
And I bet he knew a guy, or at least umpired a guy named Satchel Paige.
Many times.
What did he say about Satchel Paige?
He said Satchel Paige was the best pitcher he's ever seen. He said Satchel would throw so hard that many times when the catcher caught the ball, the catcher would not only wince out in pain, you know, because it hurt, because Satchel threw so hard, but the catcher would also fall back into my father if he's behind home plate umpiring.
Wow.
He would fall back into my father because Satchel threw so hard. Yeah.
You know, you're also a singer.
Yes.
And your mentor is a very familiar name to a lot of people, Dionne Warwick.
That's my musical mama.
How did that happen? It happened right here in town, I think.
Yeah. Dionne came to town. Don't want to date myself, but I was—
Too late.
Yeah. I was 15
years— You may have done it already.
Yeah, I think I've done that.
Yeah.
I was 15 years old, and I was working at Starlight Theater and as an usher. And she came in for a week to perform. And my mother was so excited. She was coming in, and I was like, oh, nobody wants to hear that old lady. And the second that woman walked out on stage, I tell you, I'd never seen— and I worked at Starlight Theater for, I think, 3 or 4 years. And when she walked out on stage, I'd never seen a performer command a stage and have so much grace, the way she just walked out on that stage. Mm. And I remember sitting there, and I raised up from my seat, and I said, wow. Before she even sang a note, it was like when it's like the Cuba connection, mm-hmm. you know, walking from the airport and thinking, I'm home. When Dionne walked out on that stage, I thought, that's it. And then when she opened up her mouth and sang, I was done.
And you're quite an accomplished singer yourself. You perform in front of the Boston Pops mm-hmm. and lots of other places, too. Sure. And she's been with you for much of that journey.
She has been my mentor. She has written letters of support for me. She has just been a wonderful friend through the years. She wrote the foreword for my father's book. Huh. She's just been great. Anytime I call on Dionne for something, she's like, yes. She's never said no. And we're actually working on a project together. We're hoping to do a book of memorabilia that I've collected of Dionne since I was 15. I have the largest collection of Dionne Warwick memorabilia in the world.
No kidding.
I do. And so she and I have talked about collaborating on a project to put a book together. But we can't find a publisher, unfortunately. But we're going to keep working until we find one.
Oh, you'll find one.
Yeah, we'll find one. Because it's a great collection, and she deserves that for over 50 years in the entertainment.
Well, Byron Motley, he found a publisher for his very fine new book, of Photographs and Text, Embracing Cuba. And what a pleasure to have you here.
My pleasure.